Hey, everyone. You're listening to Wireframe, a podcast about design, development, and disambiguation in our digital world. On this show, we take a transparent look into the best practices of our industry and explore new ways of approaching experiences sprinkled with a few spicy hot takes. If you want to learn more, visit wireframe.fm on the web for transcripts, show notes, and to listen to any of our other episodes. Or reach out to us on Twitter at WireframeFM. This podcast is brought to you by Design Systems House. And now here's your host, Donnie D'Amato.
Hey, good to see you. Thanks for coming. This is another episode of Wireframe, and today I'm going to be talking about CSS. Now, to start, I just want to talk about the history I have with CSS, and it's a little bit of a weird history, I think. I've been doing web development for like 25 years now. It's been a long time. It's over half my life now, I'm thinking about it. And I started doing that kind of stuff in high school, late in high school. And this is actually probably a little bit before even CSS was a real thing. We're talking like BG color stuff or slicing things in Photoshop. But I really got into CSS because I was trying to start a business. Now, the business didn't have anything necessarily to do with web development, actually. The business was called Love Per Second, and it was a speed dating business. And the reason why I wanted to do a speed dating business was because I was really into hosting events, and I thought it would be really fun to do the speed dating business because it didn't need to be a big space. I could just have, you know, a couple dozen people in the room and get them to know each other and just overall host an event. I thought that would be really fun to do. Now, with a idea, you also at this point in time needed a website, right, to get more traction. So I ended up having a site that was hosted on something called TypePad. And TypePad, I think, is actually still around. It's an old blogging platform. So what TypePad provides is areas for like content. So you can have like a main area and then a sidebar or maybe even two sidebars. And you don't have a lot of control about those areas. It's really kind of restricted. You have like widgets, of course, you could add and you can rearrange the widgets in those areas, but you don't have like all of the customizability that you might have when you were building the website yourself. I was just using it as like a hosting platform because there really wasn't a lot of hosting and I didn't want to have an entire server dedicated to this. So I thought that TypePad was a fine platform for this. But I still wanted to have some sort of personality to this website. And I had, you know, some website building experience prior to this, but, you know, that's still, again, very freeform, right? You're just going to go ahead and make some slices in Adobe Photoshop, put it together in FrontPage or something like that. And this was very restrictive. And that was the key for me learning. In fact, it was so restrictive that you didn't have access to any particular class names or IDs or anything like that. All that stuff was pre-built into TypePad, so you couldn't access that stuff to potentially change it. And the real important piece of this is that TypePad provided you a area specifically for CSS. It was just one single text box in their interface that you could put custom CSS in. So you would have to look at your source code that was available, you know, just by looking at the source for your HTML page and see what HTML classes were available in there. And you would have to hook into those with, you know, the selectors that were there and then add that custom CSS. And again, because you didn't have access to the structure to that HTML, you had to get very, very creative about the techniques that you might need to use in order to make it look like what you want. And that's the way that I really learned CSS, is through that restriction, that unavailability of getting to the HTML and being able to manipulate it in, you know, maybe something, a way that would work different for me. And this was kind of like my CSS Zen Garden. I actually wasn't around for CSS Zen Garden, or not that I wasn't around, but I never really knew about it until much later. But that was really the way that I learned about it, was that restrictive kind of nature between not having the ability to touch the HTML and only having the ability to manipulate the CSS. And that was super powerful from a learning standpoint, right? Because then you're able to learn all the tricks that you need to write the CSS and get the presentation that you're expecting. And of course, speaking of CSS tricks, I mean, that came along a little bit later from that, but certainly there are tricks that have happened over the number of years that CSS has been around. And we have been using those tricks for a long time, but now in the year 2024, there's a lot less tricks and a lot more features, which is really cool. So that's the way that I learned how to write CSS. And, you know, I'm really appreciated all of the new technologies that we've gotten in CSS over the years. I mean, Flexbox has been huge in terms of what we needed to do to create more complicated layouts these days, right? This is after the years of us doing floats. In fact, I saw a tweet recently that was saying, when's the last time you wrote this, which was float left and clear left, et cetera, et cetera. And in fact, it's actually not been so long because there's a certain trick that helps with close buttons that I've developed that's on my blog, which is called Close Thy Enemy. And that blog post actually goes around to a lot of different implementations of that close button and shows how it might break depending on the content that's put in there. And the approach that I suggest actually does solve all of those cases. So check it out if you're interested. I'll put it in the show notes. But we've come a long way to go to things like Flexbox and Grid, and now there's even, you know, the popover specification that's coming out that seems incredible. And I've actually been taking a good close look at that specification for a long time now because I actually didn't really enjoy the first kind of iterations of it. It was very messy, but now there's a lot of keywords that just help you out as opposed to writing custom position properties, which is really nice. So I'll probably try to link to the spec in the show notes or something that kind of directs you to that specification. All that aside, I actually wanted to talk a little bit more about what I think is the best way to write CSS. Now, this isn't just going to be about CSS here because it's actually going to be a little bit about HTML as well. And I think many of us who have been writing HTML and CSS for a long time will resonate with what I'm about to explain, because you end up going back and forth between the HTML and the CSS. You'll write a little bit of HTML structure, and then you'll write a little bit of CSS to go along with that structure, and then you'll return back to the HTML, and then you write some of that, go to the CSS, write some of that, right? You'll have to figure out a class name, hook into the class name and the selector. So there's a lot of going back and forth, and I am empathetic to that kind of context switching that has to happen, right? And I think if there was a way for you to just stay in the same context but provide the things that you need to make the web page look as expected, it would be a lot better, right? And I think that's the key in terms of people trying to improve the developer experience of writing CSS. Fundamentally, right? With all of the banter that goes on the internet, I think fundamentally it really comes down to the authorship experience of going between the content that is going to eventually get styles and then the styles themselves. And I think that's really where the idea of the CSS and JS direction has come from, is this idea of, you know, style components being one of the main products that supports this, where you are writing a CSS declaration, and then that CSS declaration then is rendered as a component. Now, admittedly, when I first saw that, I felt a little bit weird about that, especially since it's in a JSX environment, and I wasn't writing JSX at the time. So I didn't really get it because, again, coming from the years of experience of just writing the CSS and going back and forth with HTML, I wasn't in the environment of JSX to like appreciate what that was potentially doing. So I ended up on that a little bit late. Additionally, there's a lot of kind of weird stuff that I think people are doing in this ecosystem, which is this whole kind of like conditional add this property if this occurs, but then add this property if it doesn't occur, which ends up, you know, being weird in runtime and just like very messy when you do that conditional stuff in the CSS property space, in my opinion. I think it's actually a lot cleaner to handle it by class name or by some kind of attribute in general. But that's less related to the point I'm trying to make. And the point I'm actually trying to make dovetails into Tailwind. Now, of course, I can't have a CSS discussion without talking about Tailwind and its impact on the ecosystem. Granted, I am not a fan of Tailwind as a process or as a framework to consider to use. And again, that comes a lot from my background of writing just CSS and knowing all the properties and what that syntax is and being really, really comfortable with it. But I get the interest. And again, it goes all the way back to that developer experience, right? That context switching. Because what's happening with Tailwind is that you're not context switching. You don't have to go into that CSS file at all. And instead, you're writing the structure and including the styles in that structure, right? So you're doing that at a single point in time. And admittedly, it's very powerful, okay? Like, I totally understand the desire to be writing styles in this way, where you're just writing the structure, you're adding the styles while you write the structure, and it all happens at the same time. And especially in a world where it's JSX-driven, you're not even writing in an HTML file any longer. You're writing a single file component, more or less. And I think the single file component direction is very powerful. And I think it's really the way that we should be building, as opposed to having separate files for these things and having a build process that puts them all together. You know, having that single file is really nice. So I see the interest in Tailwind because of it, okay? But my big hot take here is that I think it was backwards. I want to get a little bit more into that, and I will, but I also want to talk a little bit about what I remember hearing about the reason why Tailwind exists. I saw the video from Tailwind Connect, I believe it was called. It was a conference for Tailwind. And I remember Adam being on stage and talking about how he came up with Tailwind, the reason why it exists. And I was really interested in learning about where his head was when he was trying to build sites. And his explanation of it was really interesting, because he was on the same path that I was considering overall, right? You have this like car component, and you want to have some styles called card that represent everything about that card. But then, of course, there's opportunities for different sort of changes that might happen to that card, different variations that happen to that card. So it was really annoying to, you know, manage all these particular variations, right? Now, I think there's a little bit of a commentary, of course, to that, where maybe there shouldn't be so many variations in the card, and that's part of the design process. But eventually, the thing that really was the light bulb moment for him was actually shadows in what he was describing, if this is accurate from his experience. Because he mentioned that there was a shadow that was on the card, but then there was also a shadow that was on some other element that was meant to show some elevation. And it was more apparent to him to have a class that represented that shadow that could be reused over and over and over again, as opposed to putting the same shadow on the card as well as this other element over here and this other element here. And of course, this is before design tokens and CSS custom properties really, I think, took off potentially. Or maybe he wasn't familiar with them. Hard to say. Because, of course, a custom property would have definitely solved that right off the bat, where you can have that single value be placed in a whole bunch of locations. But that was really his defining moment for Tailwind, is that it made more sense for it to be a class-based utility as opposed to these component-driven systems. Now, I, of course, disagree with that finding from that experience personally. And I think also some of it is very interesting when it comes to shadow being the defining feature that made him think that that shadow would be better as utility. I will probably either talk about that in another wireframe or potentially a blog post about shadows. I do want to call that out because I thought a lot about shadows and elevation in the last couple of months. That dovetails a little bit into, you know, mise en mode and other things like that, but I'm going to leave it at the moment there. But I want to get back to the concept of one file components and what Tailwind is trying to solve. So I mentioned that it was backwards, and I think it's backwards because of writing HTML and then adding styles to it. In my mind, I think it actually makes more sense, in my opinion, from my experience, to write the CSS that generates the HTML. Okay. Every time I write a Astro component, I find myself only having, you know, a few lines of HTML, maybe a few lines of JavaScript, but a lot of CSS, like a lot, right? A couple of the measurements that I took across some files that I had maybe, you know, less than 10 lines of HTML, less than 10 lines of JavaScript, but then I would have nearly 100 lines of CSS. And of course, this varies depending on the kind of stuff that you're doing. And the JavaScript that I'm talking about is mostly client-side. Much of what I'm writing seems to be CSS. So if that's the case, then I think it might make sense in this kind of environment for the component to be driven by the CSS. Now, that's exactly what I think the foundations are for style components, right? Because the component exists because of the CSS. I think that's very interesting. So with that concept, plus the idea of nesting, and in fact, nesting, I just found this out recently, happens to be available across all browsers now, natively. It's not the direct SAS nesting. There's a slight difference between SAS nesting and the browser nesting, I believe. Or that might actually be incorrect at this point, because I know there's been some changes over time with the nesting structure and what has happened there. So do your reading on that. But nesting is available natively in the browser right now in many cases. So to use the power of nesting, which that's really what you're doing with HTML, right? The HTML is a nested structure of elements that you're placing on the page. So what if you were writing CSS for it to be rendered as HTML? What if, right? Because at that point, you can do a couple of different things, right? Because you don't need to write the HTML any longer. You can nest all that CSS and that gets generated. So at that point, then there won't be any CSS that's unused, because that CSS, by definition, is creating an element. If you no longer need that element, you need to delete that CSS as well. You know, what Tailwind, of course, is doing is it's giving you all the CSS potentially and then deleting it if it doesn't exist on the page, which is another, you know, direction in the whole thing. But I think there's something better about the idea of providing exactly the CSS you need, as opposed to giving you all the potential CSS and then removing it afterwards. I'm imagining there must be some CSS that might be missed in all of that. I mean, imagining, you know, if there's additional classes that are added after render, you know, that aren't statically analyzed. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how Tailwind works in that way. But I just think that it might be a little bit cleaner just to, of course, add the exact CSS that you need, as opposed to having everything and potentially deleting it later. So anyway, the reason I'm talking about this is because I've actually presented this concept. I wrote a package called HTML by CSS. I'll have a link in the show notes about it. And it is exactly what I'm describing, where you would write CSS and it generates the HTML from that CSS. And it's very much a, you know, side project that I thought would be really interesting to try out. I'm not actually using any of my sites, to be completely honest, but it's just something to go ahead and play with. And I presented this at an event called CSS Club in New York a couple months ago. And the response was very interesting, so much so that I actually had no idea, but Rich Harris was sitting in the front row. And if you don't know who Rich Harris is, Rich is the person who developed Svelte. And he tweeted it out, actually, after my presentation, that I was doing absolute mad scientist work up there. But he really enjoyed the idea. So HTML by CSS in Svelte when? It's probably not happening, but it's okay. But I, you know, that was really interesting to get that feedback in there. I've since not really been speaking about that particular project, but I still think that there's something there for people who are interested in an alternative way of developing component libraries. I think there's still a lot more to be done with that project, but I think there's some meat there that if someone wanted to take it and run could be interesting. But that is to say that, you know, some people just don't feel like CSS as an authorship experience is the way that they want to be doing things. And that's totally fine, right? I mean, people are much more comfortable writing, you know, HTML or JSX at this point to want to have a Tailwind experience instead. So again, that context switch doesn't exist in there, right? But from a perspective that really focuses on the HTML and the CSS, right? I focus a lot less on the JavaScript and that ecosystem. I think there's something really interesting about, again, just writing the CSS and it generating HTML. I think there's something really cool about that. So is that the best way of writing CSS? Who the hell knows, right? How far can that go? I have really no idea. I think there's a lot more work to be considered in there. And plus, you know, there's so many frameworks out there that I don't understand their build processes to even potentially have some additional plugin that just kind of works in this scenario. What does the DX feel like when it comes to that stuff? I really don't know. But I think it's something that could be cool for someone to pick up and run with, someone who's more popular than me when it comes to the developer experience. I do believe that it's something better than just context switching back and forth. I think the context switching part of it is the part that needs to go. And I think that's the one thing that Style Component certainly gets right. I think that Tailwind gets right, admittedly. But from a person who's been writing CSS for a really, really long time and is passionate about being an expert in the way that CSS works, you know, the author experience of Tailwind is just not for me. However, I do have one surprise that I've been planning. And the surprise that I've been planning is that I plan to do a live stream. I'm going to call it Livewire, of course, that I'm going to attempt to learn Tailwind live. I don't know when I'm going to do it, but I definitely want to do it as a live experience that people can chime in, help, provide opinions, whatever. But I'm going to try to learn Tailwind live. And the reason is because, of course, you know, I have opinions about Tailwind, but I'm having those opinions outside of Tailwind, okay? And I've been vocal about not liking Tailwind overall, you know, as an approach. But that's, again, my own opinion there. But that's an opinion that I have without actually trying it. And it's, I think, going to be important for me to actually try it, for me to have an opinion, a true opinion about it, to write accurately about it. You know, there's been a lot of writings about Tailwind, positive, negative, whatever, that are muddying the water. And I want to have an honest attempt to learn it on stream, and then finally write an honest review about Tailwind in that way. All right, I'll keep you folks posted about when that actually happens. Again, it probably won't be for a little while, but I just wanted to kind of, you know, give that folks something to look forward to if you've gotten to the end of this episode. And let me know what you think. How do you think CSS should be written, right? Should it just be in a CSS file? Do you write post-CSS or SAS or Less or Compass, you know, all those older frameworks? Do you write in JavaScript? Do you write it in something else? You know, use Tailwind, you know, some other Panda CSS. I know it's a new one that's out that's been interesting for folks. So, you know, let me know what you're writing, what you think about it. And I'll catch you next time. Later.
That wraps up the show for today. This has been another episode of Wireframe. If you liked this episode, please share it with your network. If you want to learn more, visit wireframe.fm on the web for transcripts, show notes, and to listen to any of our other episodes, or reach out to us on Twitter at wireframefm. This podcast is brought to you by Design Systems House. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay clear.